dumbass on you.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 58, featuring Ron, Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Mike DiDonato. Need an original piece of art? Ever fancy being drawn? Well, Pat Loika can make it happen. Pat's rates are affordable and satisfaction is guaranteed. Mention this ad and get 20% off your first order. For samples of Pat's work, see the covers of Sarcastic Voyage episodes 13, 36, 47, and 48, or listen to these Pat's testimonials from satisfied customers. Pat's testimonials? Did Matt write this?
I'm the genius creator of an acclaimed podcast. Pat Loika has drawn me as a Ghostbuster, a member of the Justice League, well, a Justice League, and he's even depicted me in those tiny shorts our voice guy obsesses over for some reason. Thanks, Pat!
He took one of the most painful, embarrassing moments of my life and captured it perfectly on paper. Thanks bunches, Pat Loika.
Send all inquiries to patloika@gmail.com. That's P-A-T-L-O-I-K-A. Introduction.
We got this email from Bill Ryan, the comics emu.
Famous
comic
emu.
Called the comics emu? I don't even know anymore.
I don't know. His picture's not Nemo on Twitter anymore, but I feel like that's one of those things that should stick.
I can't
think
of him as anything but an emu. And I did sort out if he's the emu or well, that it's a
he knows the emu.
He almost 1 hour intro contest. He and Jesse. We decided to send them. He came up with "Oh, this again."
Mm.
And I wanted to share this with you. He sent me his address, which was nice. But he sent me this great little email. He says, "Sorry, this is sort of late. Just got around to checking out the latest thing. Also, I'm not sure where to send this. On a personal note, just let me say how proud I might have been to be the originator of something you might probably not say. Some people wait their whole lives for such a thing to maybe not happen, and now it kind of hasn't." So that was, I thought I should share that because...
That was beautiful.
Bill is delightful. And he's one of those guys who will not be on the show, no matter how many times I beg and plead. And he's one of the funnier guys we know, and I wish...
That's a damn shame.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, some people don't want to do the, you know, talking thing or whatever.
I suppose, but yeah.
Like, I've been bugging your pal Jim to come on for months and months, and he just didn't do it. We had a little tiff about Twitter. He doesn't like Twitter. I do. But apart from that, we have those every now and then. I can't imagine that's why. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Such a shame. I mean, he was – Bill was one of the first guys I ever sort of met on the message board that dare not speak its name.
Yeah, he's he was the me of back then. He was the guy who was there all the time.
He was the golden age Al.
Yeah. And he was far superior. I mean, I'm not I'm not laying claim to the legacy at all. I was the Kyle Rayner in this relationship, believe me. And no, I'm not apologizing to Kyle fans because fuck you. Idea for a character. Anyway,
apologize to them. They lost in the end.
Nope, I won't apologize to the Spider Clone fans either.
All three of them.
Hey, you said yourself that you'll be selling those trades.
Listen, I'm fascinated by this.
Why?
Okay.
Well, let's finish our Bill Ryan.
Okay. We'll come back to this though.
No, he was both of us and for a lot of other people coming onto that message board. And incidentally, you now know what message board it is. We're still not going to say, but we mentioned it in a previous episode. If you really want to be a junior sleuth, go figure it out. But we're not going to say it again.
No.
But yeah, for both of us, he was always there. He posted all the time, and most of it was funny. And he's a fun, friendly, interesting kind of guy. Then he just kind of disappeared for a while and everyone was sad.
And then he just appeared on Twitter and it was like the clouds parted and a ray of sunshine just beamed down onto my monitor.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And he doesn't Twitter.
An choir of emus sang hallelujah.
he he doesn't post nearly enough, but then I say that about everyone who doesn't post as much as I do, which is everyone.
Listen, man, nobody posts as much as you do.
I don't know why that is. I, you know.
James D. Twitter, the inventor of Twitter, doesn't post as much as you.
Yes, of the Vermont Twitterers. That joke never gets old to me. All right, Spider Clone. Let's do this.
I was absolutely fascinated.
Let's back up a step first.
Okay.
For those in the audience who do not know, in the 90s...
Once upon a time...
Matt, maybe you should describe this, because my understanding may be a little skewed. Maybe...
Okay. Once upon a time... Spider-Man was an asshole in the 90s. In an effort to make him dark and gritty, he just stopped being fun. You know? I believe he struck his wife at one point.
Wow.
Yeah. And so Marvel's big idea was, okay, we need a new Spider-Man. We need to reboot the character. And so what they did was they took a 70s story where Spider-Man had been cloned by, I think it was the Jackal.
It was the Jackal. I've actually read those stories recently.
At the end of that story, I think it was like two issues long, the clone died and Spider-Man, decided that he was the original Spider-Man because there'd been some confusion about that because he felt true love for Mary Jane. So,
and then 20 years later threw her down the stairs or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, eventually Marvel started showing this shadowy figure. And he would call Aunt May while she was in the hospital, and he would watch Spider-Man do stuff.
And this is why I read superhero comics, is to see a shadowy figure stalking an old lady. Anyway,
hello?
I'm coming for you, May.
Who is this shadowy figure? Find out in Web of Spider-Man 485.
Put the wheat cakes on, I'm coming over.
He's still coming. Find out who in Spectacular Spider-Man 748.
Don't forget about those wheat cakes.
The wheat cakes will appear next week. In...
Hey, so you still married to Dr. Octopus? I'm running out of things I know about Aunt May. Wheat cakes is it. You still sick? You still need that medicine?
You're dying of the heart attack.
God. Anyway. So yeah, they decided that the clone was the real guy and the real guy was the clone, right?
And the idea, yeah, basically.
So
and
the
Spider-Man
idea character you've been reading for 20 years was no longer him. It's basically like saying, hey, you know this guy you love? Well, it's a lie.
Well, and so basically the idea was to just sort of quietly retire him, give him quietly retire the real Spider-Man, give him a family, and have this sort of new, happier clone taking over for him. Mm. And that, here's the thing. The concept is not a bad one.
Yeah, it is.
Okay? No, it's not. And
you're more into this crap than I am, but I think it's a terrible concept.
And I mean, listen, I'm not a fan of getting rid of Spider-Man as a character, like Peter Parker as a character, but the idea of bringing the clone back, making him, say, you know, a bad guy, or even just, hey,
no,
who
that's,
is this?
That's fine, but what I didn't like was being told, hey, everything you knew all along was wrong, and this guy isn't Spider-Man at all. Like, oh, come on, really?
Anyway, the thing completely spun out of control because it made more money than God.
Of course it did, like all comics in the 90s because of speculators and variant covers and all that crap.
Here's the thing. You had Spider-Man shipping weekly, basically, because like there was five books coming out, plus miniseries. Mm-hmm. And the thing at Marvel was just keep this going as long as possible because it is making so much goddamn money. And this story went on for over 2 years.
Ooh.
I love the enthusiasm. Two.
Go on.
And then basically it was just, okay, we need to end this, get it over with, and never talk about it again. And that happened.
Right.
The thing is, nostalgia's funny. Because I would get people into the store all the time looking for back issues of the Clone Saga. They wanted like every issue of this. And you know, we're talking about like something like 200 Spider-Man.
Sure, because not only did it run for 2 years, but it ran across all those titles. So you're talking, you can't just buy, you know, like even if they publish like an archive, like I have a DVD that has 500 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. You're only going to have like a third of the story from that.
Yeah, exactly. So Marvel sort of shut it up in a box and didn't talk about it for 10 years or so. Late 2009, early 2010, they put out a miniseries that was basically a retelling of the Clone Saga. I know this because I bought it for my brother.
Of course you did. You bought it for your friend. It's not for you.
No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
They've also finally collected it. It's going to be released as a series of graphic novels, and I predict it to sell like fucking crazy.
Wow. And people still care, because it's a nostalgia thing.
Yep.
Here's the thing. Here's what drove me from comics in the 90s, and I may have mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again. In the 90s, in 93, 94, somewhere around there, you had Superman was dead.
Yep.
And you had replacement Superman running around.
Yep.
Batman broke his back. You had a replacement Batman running around.
Ugh.
Green Lantern died, and you had a replacement Green Lantern running around.
No, first Green Lantern went insane and killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, and then he died, and they replaced him. Spider-Man was not Spider-Man at all. He was somebody else, and they replaced him.
Yep.
So essentially all like the great characters, and I'm probably missing some, but those are the ones that I kept up
and
with.
And nobody cared what was happening to Wonder Woman.
No. Well, nobody ever cares what's going on. But no, I mean, most of the characters I cared about, and I didn't care about Superman. I'm just throwing him in there because he's the big obvious example. But those other characters...
Well, I mean, that was a big thing.
It was. And I worked in a newsstand at the time.
Oh, dear. I'm
so sorry.
I
can only imagine what the comic shops went through. But we went through that, too, where, you know, do you have the death of Superman? Is it, you know, is this going to be worth a lot of money, right? No. Well, I better buy three because then that'll be worth... No. Look, that's going to be worth $1, so $3. But I'm going to charge you, you know, $12.50 right now. Yeah, but it seemed to be this trend in the industry where everything you knew was wrong, and all the old characters were gone, and we're going to replace them with hip new characters. And why?
Well, I mean that comic cliche has been around forever.
I can't think of it ever being happening so much all at once, though.
No, that
every
you,
now and
no,
then they'll
right
take
there.
Like in Crisis they replaced Flash, and the Silver Age replaced the Golden Age. I understand that.
Alan Moore did it masterfully in Swamp Thing.
Yeah, it's been done. I'm not saying it's been done, and I'm not saying it can't be done well. I'm saying it happened all at once to a lot of major characters all at the same time, and it was so overwhelming to me that I didn't care anymore.
Well, it's just, let's replace all these characters with younger, hipper versions.
Right, and if they had just done it with, say, Batman and nobody else. Like, aren't they doing that right now where Batman is actually Robin or something?
Yeah, Dick Grayson's Batman right now.
Which, you know, apparently, listening to you guys, apparently that's going over quite well because it's in good hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a thing that's being done on 50 titles. It's just being done to one character. And so, you know, that's an example
of how it's being done on 50 Batman titles.
Right. But what I'm saying is they're not also doing the same thing to Superman simultaneously.
Right.
And Green Lantern and Flash and everybody else. It's just the one guy. So it can be done. You're right about that. But
it's just doing it all at once.
It was like 93, 94, 95. They suddenly decided everything you know about all the characters you love is wrong. And let's replace it all at once. And we know best. And it's kind of telling that within 10 years, they went back to the status quo every single time because it was a stupid idea.
Well, I mean, in the case of Batman and Superman, those were just money grabs. I mean, you know, you put the character in a box for, you know, a year and then bring him back out and your sales shoot up again.
Yeah, but the thing about that, specifically about the Superman thing,
I knew
when it happened. Everybody knew when it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Not comics people knew that it was a cash grab. That's fine. That doesn't mean you don't write it well. You can still write it well.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that they were written well. They were not.
It really felt like they didn't plan it out. It felt like, and then he was in a coma and he came back.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a super coma.
You could have planned it. Like the Captain America being shot, like, what, 5 years ago now? It was a long time
ago. It's more like three, I think.
Stuck with that for a while. That seemed like it was planned from day one, and it seems like it maybe went on a little longer than it needed to. But
that was the problem. It was planned. Like the return was only supposed to be like a 2-issue thing,
right?
And they spread it out to 6.
Well, and that's it. Seems like it's spread out. But what I'm saying is, when they killed off that character, they knew how they were going to bring him back. And I don't even know how they brought him back, but I bet it was pretty cool. Like I bet it was logical, and I bet they put the seeds for how it happened in the story itself. And
apparently, I have something else I need to send you.
Whereas with Superman. He just, he wasn't dead after all.
He was in a coma in Kryptonian Diamond. And
it seems to me that if you're going to pull that stunt, you plan it out and you say, okay, he's coming back in 2 years.
Yeah.
Plant the seeds in the story and do it, you know, logically. And they didn't do that. It was just, and it seemed to me, and again, I'm not an expert by any means. I read comics and then I stopped reading comics. But it seems to me like the artists were driving all that crap. Like the writers were just kind of disposable guys. In the 90s, and it was all about the artists. It was all about paying, you know, McFarlane and Jim Lee and all those guys like millions of dollars, and we'll get whoever to write it. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares about the story. But I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
I don't actually think you are.
Okay, then.
Well, so that burns my bridges with any comic fans who actually like that stuff.
Oh, and I'm sure there are. I mean, I'm sure people, you know, and the thing, like you said, nostalgia, if you grew up, if your first Spider-Man comic was the Clone Saga.
See, and that's the thing. That was one of the first Spider-Man comics I ever bought.
Yeah. I'm going to, you know, the very first Spider-Man comic I ever bought, you and I talked about this a little bit today.
Mm-hmm.
It was Amazing Spider-Man number, I got, I don't know, 170 something. It was like from 1976, because I'm very old. But I finally was looking at this collection I was just talking about on DVD, this 500 issues of Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Scrolling through just for the hell of it, just when I have a few minutes.
Looking for good pictures of J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, exactly, because we've been off on that tear. And I located this issue that I had when I was five, and I read over and over and over again. This was before comic shops were around everywhere, or not everywhere. You know, there were no comic shops. You bought them at the drugstore, and because I'm quite old, like I say, and I didn't really realize that you could go buy additional issues. So I just read this one over and over.
Yeah, no, I was exactly the same way.
And it's. I don't even remember exactly the story because it was part of a long running thing. It had a shitty villain called Willow the Wisp.
Ah, yes.
Who apparently his power is that he sucks. but here's the best part. Here's the part that even like 7 year old me and even now I can't quite grasp. J. Jonah Jameson, editor of the Daily Bugle, staunch anti Spider-Man,
fan of pictures of Spider-Man.
Right.
Coffee aficionado.
Decides that he hates Spider-Man so much, he's got to build a super powerful robot suit to destroy him. He's given up on the power of photojournalism and editorials. And he's decided to instead to get this powerful robot suit to destroy Spider-Man. And in my head, to this day, there's a picture of J. Jonah Jameson. Like, it's just his head, because I think it's like a projection of him. He's controlling it remotely. Clanking around in this giant robot trying to destroy Spider-Man. And
it was a really shitty looking robot too.
Oh, it was awesome. What are you talking about? That's
I must be thinking of something else, because they did an adaptation of that for the 60s show.
I think it's the same one.
And it was this piece of shit robot with like his face on the chest.
Yep. Oh no, it wasn't on the chest, it was where the head belonged, but okay. it was still just like a square guy.
But I'll see if I can look for that for the show notes.
I'll definitely provide that. But I'm well on the record as being a fan of very classic, simple line square robots. Fuck you, Michael Bay. Megatron is not a pineapple. He's a square guy. But that's what he looked like. Only for some reason with the face of a newspaper editor. And I'm just trying to imagine. Like, and I know he's not an editor, he's like a mogul, but really, like, Rupert Murdoch stomping around in a robot suit, like, or, you know, just somebody with a controlling interest in the media getting so pissed off, you know, Bill O'Reilly flying around on a giant crab, or, you know.
Jonah, we gotta get the late edition out. Not now, Robertson! I'm gonna smash Spider-Man with my giant robot! I'll come back later, then.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in this fictional world where, you know, you have superheroes and supervillains and all this ridiculous stuff exists, I suppose there's a certain logic to it. But really, really? And that's what makes it so great. I mean, I love it, but it's just so absurd.
That's the world, the universes that sort of exist between like the super, like what superheroes are doing always fascinate me.
Yeah.
That's why I loved Powers so much.
That's why that's pretty much my favorite kind of stories are those, like Astro City. Like, what was that other one that I loved like that? Well, Top 10, Alan Moore's Top 10.
Yep.
Gotham
Central touched on it a little bit.
I didn't read that, but I heard it was good.
List of shit to send you.
Common Grounds.
You were talking about
the one that I was telling you about that you had actually. I might have something to send to you. It's very similar to like Astro City, actually. It's like, what everyday people are like and like, There was a story about a character like the Flash, obviously an analog because they can't use the Flash, extrapolating what he would have to eat to keep up that speed. There's a nice little let's take 10 pages to explore the logic of this. You must need that much fuel to create that much energy. And he just ate constantly. It was hilarious.
Well, I mean, I love it. It's like J. Jonah Jameson is a well-known newspaper publisher who is currently mayor of New York. he once used a giant robot to fight Spider-Man, and his son is a werewolf from the moon.
And didn't you also say that he helped create one of Spider-Man's? Like,
yeah, he paid to create the Scorpion.
Really?
Yep, for the exact same reason. He hired a private eye and paid to have him put into the Scorpion suit so that he could fight Spider-Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Impartialness in the press.
Fair and balanced. I'm just imagining like Fox News or, you know, I don't know who's on the other side. I know there are loonies on the other side too, but Fox News is the obvious easy punching bag. Just any kind of fringe, like radical, you know, crazy journalist climbing into some kind of a suit or getting a monster. Like I was about to say Ann Coulter, but she basically is a monster.
Oh yeah.
But you know, like I love that idea. I think there needs to be an entire series about, like, I don't know, newspaper editors fighting with robots.
Rush Limbaugh and a giant spider.
I would buy the shit out of that.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Not so much Rush Limbaugh, but, you know.
No.
Birch Barlow. it's been a lot of fun for me reading those old 70s stories, and I suppose they're just as ridiculous as the Clone Saga, honestly. But I grew up with those, so shut up.
Someone once said, and this is true, all comics are ridiculous.
Well, yeah, obviously. I was looking earlier. There's that Marvel cartoon now that makes me cringe.
The superhero squad.
Yeah. Which, on the one hand, I know why it exists, and I'm fine with it, and it's, you know, whatever. But on the other hand, it's like, oh, really, Marvel? You can't. Come on. Just make one cartoon for me once.
Look, you guys have all seen Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, and Bruce Timm for a while was almost not working for DC, like for Warner. They could have grabbed him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But on the other hand, I was thinking, and I actually was reading, like I broke my own rule. I scrolled down. I read a YouTube comment, which you should never scroll down.
Never do it.
Never. But and somebody said, this is ridiculous. And I stopped and I thought, this is ridiculous, but a guy who gets angry and turns to a big green hulking monster and a Norse god who carries a magic hammer and so on and so on and so on, that's not ridiculous? And exactly what you just said. Yes, it's all fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Live with it. And that's why the bigger concepts, the better concepts, like Batman. That's why the Batman animated series can exist, and that's why The Brave and the Bold can exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because the concept is big enough to embrace both. It's big enough to be a cool noir thing, and it's big enough to be a ridiculous campy thing.
While we're on the topic, though, the Batman cannot exist.
No, that was just bad.
Yeah.
That's not. But, I mean, The Brave and the Bold at least said, you know what, we're not going to try to be dark. We're going to go a whole different direction with this. We're going to do something goofy.
Brave and the Bold is great fun.
I do not care for it, but I'm glad that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's like watching The Tick without jokes. What I decided.
Yeah, I could see that. So a Silver Age comic.
There is a certain logic to Silver Age comics that it's not even hinted
at. I'm sorry. Would you mind telling me where the logic is in the League of Beards?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There is a certain twisted logic to the Silver Age that's not quite. I don't think the League of Beards. I think that's too stupid for the Brave and the Bold. I think the Brave and the Bold draws a line and says, we're going to get campy. We're going to get ridiculous. However, League of Beards too far. That's what I'm saying. I think they're not quite on the same page as far as, you know, they wouldn't have Lois Lane turning. Well, they might have Lois Lane turning into a monkey, I suppose. But I think you understand what I'm saying. I think Silver Age is probably the pinnacle. I don't know that superheroes could get any more ridiculous than, you know, even parodies just haven't quite matched, you know, gold kryptonite and purple kryptonite. And
well, I mean, the thing was they were weird, but they were so genuine.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
there's no irony there. That's what it is.
Of course Superman turns into a bug when he touches red kryptonite.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, but why wouldn't he?
It's the lack of irony. It's the fact that you take this seriously. Like, it's whoever wrote it just thought that's how it goes. Like, why would you, you know, why do you need to analyze this? Why do you need to be meta? Why do you need to deconstruct this? Just it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of appreciate that. It's like Actually, there was that Alan Moore Superman story. Fucking now I'm drawing a blank on what it was.
What was it about?
It was like it was meant to be the last Silver Age story.
Oh, whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
There's that great quote at the beginning that I've used in a lot of different contexts. That's so fantastic, where he says, "This is an imaginary story, but then again, what isn't?"
Yeah,
I was like, "Fuck yes, yes!" Once again, crazy snake worshipping magician man, you have shown me the way.
Well, I'm always here to help. If you ever need me, just blow on this whistle. Alan Moore away.
Very good, sir. I'll just walk then. Alan Moore has his own butler as well. Everyone in England has one.
Mullikins.
Mullikins?
Mullikins.
All right, then. I think that's about it, though. I think particularly those of you who have no interest in comics, we kind of went off on a little tangent here. That happened.
This is the podcast that could have been.
You just wait. There's some tangents coming up. The password is Panther. So we'll be speaking with Mike DiDonato, a good friend of ours from online, and look forward to that. And
wrap in. Have a nice time with that.
Yeah.
Panel discussion.
All right, our guest this week is Mike DiDonato, one of our friends from the ether that is the internet. Michael, thank you for being with us. And that's it. I got nothing.
Yeah. All right, good show.
Yeah, great.
Dangers of having somebody with nothing to plug.
Oh, we've had plenty of those.
Can't you make something up or something? Yeah, don't you quickly have a grill coming out? Or
all right, here's my plug. I can be seen in my rec room 8 to 10 o'clock for the next 2 weeks.
Very nice. And that's Eastern time, right?
Just playing Bioshock 2 in my underwear. The 10 o'clock show is exactly the same as the 12 o'clock show.
Ooh, fantastic. You don't punch it up? It's not a little bluer for the for the later crowd?
Maybe I'll take the socks off.
Ooh, very nice. So yeah, I usually have something to start with and plug and so forth, but
I've created quite the conundrum.
No, not really. We had Travis on; he was useless too. So I kid.
That guy's just a great big ball of awesome. I refuse to.
Yeah, play. He is. He absolutely is. But that was, it was too easy a shot not to take, and that was the most recent person. We've had plenty of them. I mean, we get Flonk on every other week, for Christ's sake.
That's true.
Now, so you know Flonk in person. You've met him a number of times. So
several times.
Yeah.
I count Flonk as a friend.
Why? You've met him.
Oh, pity.
You've gotten a famous drunken text from him.
Several.
Oh, everyone's gotten those. You're the only one who hadn't. So who somehow weaseled out of that? I don't know how that happened.
I just didn't give him my phone number. It works really well.
Yeah, but I have your phone number. I can give it to him.
Oh, shit. Hey, Matt wants a drunken text.
Hey, Flonk, Matt's phone number is, what is it? I'm not allowed to do that, am I? Isn't that like some kind of...
I would prefer that you didn't.
Oh, all right.
That'll be in the show notes.
You get more than one, by the way.
It's 6. I'll read the other numbers later.
They'll be released randomly over the next few episodes.
Pay attention. Every number I say is another number. I don't even know if it's 6, actually. I was bluffing. Amanda started with a 6. So I have no idea.
I think that
now they should call Amanda.
I think that Flonk should actually move to drunken robocalls. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, like a telemarketing thing?
Well, just where like it kind of he just says one drunk message and then like another voice fills in all the details.
Oh, nice.
Oh, hello, Matthew.
I'm calling from Outback Store 687.
I'm calling from Decrepit Alley.
I wish you a down in vomit.
Nice.
I just drank my weight in gin.
The funniest of the drinks.
We got one laugh out of that anyway. So, Mike, we got some letters here for you. Let's do this a little differently. Let's switch up and dip into the old mailbag here, since we got some stuff here for you, or apparently not for you. Scott Zioko writes, "Dear Al, Matt, and Mike, this question is for Mike D. Are you sure that you're not Mike D of the Beastie Boys? What you want, Scott?"
Okay, Scott. Well, even though I do expect your cash and your jewelry. I am not the Mike D from the Beastie Boys, although I have been known to steal many of his rhymes. And I was Mike D before there was a Mike D from the Beastie Boys.
So that I'm not actually sure is accurate there. I fancy myself a bit of a Beastie historian, and I think you might be wrong. Actually,
we are the same age, so you have to realize that when did that first album come out? When we were in high school?
Well, Licensed Ale came out in '86, but they did their punk stuff before that. So
New Jersey suburbs, we don't get anything that cool that early. We get everything once MTV is force fed it to us.
Play the Jersey card early.
So he will. He has predated me in the larger world.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, are you chilling at the beach down at Club Med?
Not currently.
And secondly, are you in any way related, or have you been rumored to be related to Dustin Diamond, who played Screech on Saved by the Bell?
There's an uncanny resemblance.
Really?
No. There is an uncanny resemblance to the actual Mike D, to that guy, though. They look pretty similar, especially as Mike D gets older.
Well, that's that's one of those urban myths that's completely not true. But if you've also been attached to Screech in some way or another, then
not in a positive way. More like, hey, you know who is as equally successful getting dates as you?
That dude's making porn now, so I wouldn't.
Hey, he was on Celebrity Boxing.
Was he
not
really?
That going?
Oh dear.
Maybe.
Was he?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Didn't he? Who was it? Who did he fight? Was it Willis from Different Strokes?
I hope so.
No, that guy. I do remember this. I don't watch that stuff, but I do seem to recall that Todd Bridges cleaned the clock of whoever it was, and I want to say it was Vanilla Ice, but I could be mistaken about that.
I hope that you're right, actually, because that would be way cooler.
Let's ask the internet, won't we?
Hey, internet.
Yeah. Thrilling Googling action here, folks.
They need to bring that show back, by the way, but have Gary Coleman and his wife, because there's some crazy stuff going on in that house.
I have no idea. I don't.
Gary Coleman keeps busted for like domestic abuse.
Oh,
Todd Bridges versus Vanilla Ice. Yes,
that's what I thought. And he like, it was like a one punch thing. It was like Batman versus Guy Gardner. It was over in like a second.
Yeah,
yeah, I do remember that. But
it was like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Strip Club. One punch and it was over.
I was it.
Yeah.
Strip Club? Are you talking about a movie called Strip Club? Or
No. Real life. Okay. Jean-Claude Van Damme was in a New York strip club. This is a couple of years back. And as the story goes, there's this dude who is a Hell's Angel and a part-time actor by the name of Chuck Zito.
Okay.
I think that Chuck Zito is only known to people who maybe watched Oz. He played the really, really bulky Italian guy.
Oh, of course. The bulky Italian guy.
He played bulky Italian guy. I mean, he got an
Well, he must have been on The Sopranos then also, because come on.
Anyway, he's this crazy New York Hell's Angel guy, and he was in, I can't remember which one, but Jean-Claude Van Damme was there, and Van Damme decided to show off to his friends and mouth off this guy, and this dude clocked him out in one punch. Roddy doesn't know anything from a hole in the wall except mess you up. That's the only thing this guy knows.
See, now, when you said Jean-Claude Van Damme in Strip Club, my first thought was he made a horrible knockoff of Roadhouse called Strip Club.
I would pay to see that, too.
Would you really?
Yeah, if every 5 minutes in the movie, an increasingly ridiculous guest star comes in and knocks him out in one punch, that'd be awesome.
And you really could hold that up for 90 minutes.
Huh? Diamond knocking him out with a single punch.
Gary Coleman's wife.
Yeah. Gary Coleman's wife brandishing Gary Coleman.
Wow, that's a good use of Gary Coleman, actually. Grabbing by his ankles and swinging him around. Yeah,
yep.
Right now, I think that's the only use of Gary Coleman.
He did some decent voice acting in a video game that I played, but that was 15 years ago. So,
oh yeah,
he was in Monkey Island 3.
He but was too.
I don't know what the hell he's doing now. I really couldn't really care less.
He's a strange dude now.
Well, he had that thing, right? That growth thing where he won't. He's like a kid forever or something. Is that the story?
It's not the growth thing so much because he didn't have that thing where the features stay the same. I think he actually does kind of look like an adult to a degree now. But there was some kind of – it definitely was obviously some kind of dwarfism in play. And you had that. Yeah. And I think he had one of those standard – I was a child actor and my parents stole all my money stories. So the deck was stacked against Gary from the get-go.
Well, now tell me this. Did Emmanuel Lewis have that same thing or did he just grow up to be a guy?
No, he has that same thing.
Really? Because I just assumed because they were on similar shows that they both had the same condition. But then I realized I never saw him after Webster. So for all I know, he was just a little kid and he grew up to be a normal guy.
Somebody may correct me later on down the line, but I'm pretty sure that similar condition. Yes, Ashwin is screaming.
Well, you know what? I'm just gonna go ahead and say it right now. Emmanuel Lewis is dead.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace.
Yes.
With Gene Wilder. I think they died in the same horrible cancer accident.
They died in a fight.
Did they?
They died in a knife fight.
Nice. Yes. And then somebody pulled a Gary Coleman, and that was it for Webster.
The poor Papadopouloses. All right, Mike, we got another letter here also from Scott Siocco.
Is this going to be another Beastie Boys thing? Because that really gets old like in 5 minutes.
Listen.
Well, if there's one thing that Scott loves, it's running a joke into the ground.
Listen, do you know about the donut thing?
I do know about the donut thing. Yeah, well. I was going to send you donuts, but then I couldn't be that cruel.
I actually ended up giving Scott donuts at Emerald CityCon, and as far as I'm concerned, it's a dead issue. So it's also ceased being funny about 20 weeks ago. It doesn't actually upset me. I just can't find an angle to make it funny anymore. So that's really all it is. Anyway, the question is, if the previous answer was no, dear Al, Matt, and Mike, this question again is for Mike D. Are you absolutely, positively, 100% sure that you're not Mike D of the Beastie Boys?
God damn it, Scott.
Check it out, Scott.
I wish I was. I am not.
Incidentally, if anyone in the Beastie Boys is listening, put your fucking next album out, for Christ's sake. Sorry, just a little bummer.
Well, actually, I think that there's a... This is a kind of bummer news, but... and I think it's...
No,
is
it Mike D? I know. No, it was MCA. Adam Yauch has
cancer. That's why they're...
Yeah, but the album's done. Like, I'm not... And I'm not trying to be, unsensitive or anything, but really, come on. Like, just put out the album. Like, get better, but let me hear the music. Come on.
Well, they probably don't want to put it out until they can tour behind it.
I suppose that's true. I just,
donate some proceeds to cancer research or something.
Sure. Yeah. I'm very selfish is all it is. That's pretty much it.
I want it now.
Yeah. Don't want the guy to die, but
no.
Yeah. Now there was that Futurama episode that they appeared on, and Fry says, "Back in the 20th century, I had all 5 of your albums," and one of them says, "That was 1,000 years ago. Now we got 7." That's really, really accurate. And Scott continues, "If the previous answer was yes, dear Al, Matt, and Mike, I have no funny comeback to that previous answer, so I will leave it at that. What's so funky about a brass monkey, anyway, Scott?" Fortunately, that's the end of that. So if you have anything more to add, go ahead. Otherwise, we'll consider this a dead issue.
Thank God for that.
All I can tell you is that there is nothing as funky as a brass monkey.
Fair enough.
Really? Nothing?
Nothing. Nothing.
All right.
Scientifically proven, man.
All right. You heard it here first, folks.
No, I think probably not. They heard it here, but I don't think they heard it first. Mike must have heard it from somewhere.
You heard it here 87 times, folks.
Unfortunately, we're not quite out of the woods yet. Yes, we're finished with the Scott Beastie Boys questions. However, now we have a question from Flonk.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Dear Al, Matt, and the person that you either met online or went to high school with. We've had guests that don't fall into either of those categories, so shut up, man.
Did we?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There's been two.
At least two. No, there's been more than that, actually.
I just wanted to yell out the two.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been dying to do that all week.
Thank you.
I shoehorned it in the first available minute.
That's all right. Now you need to say shake hands with danger at some point. We pretty much got all our little catchphrases, I think. No, you got to say phenomenon also.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can play.
I want that one to come organically.
No, fuck organic. Come on.
Shoehorn it in, goddammit. Where do you think you are?
Yes.
Yeehaw.
And Flonk writes, "Oh man, remember Inspector Gadget?"
Nope. I do, actually.
I do.
Nope, I don't.
Flonky?
I yes. do, but I'm not going to give him the satisfaction there.
I used to love Inspector Gadget.
Now, this has actually been a running thing on Twitter, and it's mostly just me and Flonk being jerks, I have to admit. But Pablo, you know him from the board there, Mike.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a funny little guy. I enjoy him quite a bit. He's got a lot to say, but he's got a lot of nonsense to say. And for the last little while, he'll just randomly say, "Oh, man, remember something?" And that's it. That's all he'll say. And Flonk and I kind of seized on that today and got a little carried away with it.
So he's like the Larry King of Twitter.
Basically, but at the same time, Adrian has been Larry Kinging also.
Yeah, but with Adrian, you always know that he's doing it to take the piss out of somebody.
Well, of course.
And probably Pablo.
Well, yeah. No, I just like, oh man, remember the Man of La Mancha? Oh man, remember Manimal? And so on in that fashion. Yeah.
Sadly, I remember Manimal.
So do I. Actually,
I remember references to Manimal.
Actually, I made that one, Oh Manimal. Anyone remember Manimal? Trying to get a little meta with it. Yeah, I was actually, because when I made that reference, I went, like I always do, I looked it up on Wikipedia, because I can't not do that now. And I realized that my memory was accurate, that though the premise of the show was that he could turn into any animal, he only ever turned into two animals.
Yes, they didn't have much of a budget.
No, and so he was a panther and some kind of a bird, I think.
Yeah.
Every week, always.
So, same transformation scene each time.
Yep. Which they paid probably a fair bit of money for, because it looks like, I think, Stan Winston did it. But, that's it. Like, so you can change into any animal, and apparently you can solve every problem by being a panther.
I'm pretty sure that's true.
Oh, well, all right.
I can't think of a single problem that you can't solve by turning into a panther.
Well,
see, neither can you. There you go.
No, you've stumped me.
I'm stumped. I can't think of a single thing.
No.
Folks, right. If you can think of a single thing that can't be solved by turning into a panther, please write us and let us know.
Or don't. That's fine.
You can also do that.
No, there was something. A hawk. That was the other thing. So, I mean, right there, he's getting even fancier. Like, if you can solve every problem with being a panther, then you also have that hawk thing. So, I mean, you're pretty...
Well, now that Matt's explained this to me better, I think that the panther was the animal he turned to do all kinds of logistical equations, because apparently panthers can do all that kind of stuff, like, handle machinery,
like
stuff like that.
And that kind of thing, sure.
And then the hawk was just, a transportation thing.
Yeah. I suppose that makes sense.
I need to fly over there and do some advanced panther math.
Yes.
Oh, and of course, the show was narrated by the great William Conrad, who one of the great sandwich actors of yesteryear.
Once upon a time, Manimal went to the store.
Wasn't he like one of them B-word fat guys?
Yes, he was.
That's what I thought. Manimal, I return to Manimal.
On NBC.
Fantastic. No, Manimal ran, there was that weird period when I was really little where they ran all these like cool sci-fi shows for like a day, and then they'd pull them away from you.
Wasn't Misfits of Science in that Manimal time frame?
Yep, and also Voyagers, the time travel show.
Oh, God, now I do. Oh, man, that one totally slipped by.
They had like a little pocket watch device that they traveled through time with.
Sure. Yeah, that really helped with the budget.
Well, Punky Brewster's little brother actually played the kid on that, and the lead.
And look what he's got on to now.
What's that?
When would this have been
look
about?
What he's got on to do now?
Mino Pelus? Well, let's find out. Hello, internet. Tell me.
Use my panther internet skills.
Nothing. Years active, 1977 to 1985. So absolutely nothing.
Apparently working at a deli.
But he has an awesome name, Mino Pelus. I mean, come on. How much cooler can you get than that? Well, probably.
It was a hippie family, if I've ever seen one.
Well, I'm in Sol El Moonfry, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was the show, and Mike, you may remember this, Matt. This probably happened before you were born. The lead dude in that, Phineas Bogg was the character's name. Yeah, I know. Phineas Bogg and Jeffrey Jones. And not Kid Toucher Jeffrey Jones, the fictional character Jeffrey. He was on some other show, some horrible like soap opera type thing, and he held a blank, like a gun loaded with blanks, up to his head, and mimed shooting himself and actually killed himself.
That actor's name is John Eric Hexham.
Yep, that's him.
I don't know why I remember that.
He had an awesome vest on Voyagers that when I was a kid, I thought was the height of fashion. And,
one of the all-time stupidest ways to die.
And that's why you killed him and took it.
Now I have his vest. Now if I can only turn into a panther, all my problems will be solved.
Someday. Simon McCorkendale.
I will be a panther in a vest. Yeah. Now apparently what happened was he was
he was talking about, oh, this is taking forever. And he just kind of mimed holding the gun to his head and said, oh, it's killing me now. And then blew his brains out.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a moron.
Not on purpose.
Yeah. Brandon Lee was killed by a blank as well, wasn't he?
Was he?
I don't know. I believe so.
I thought it was.
Although he didn't put it to his head, I think it was fired.
Yeah, I thought that it was someone had put an actual bullet into the gun or something.
Was that it? I always thought that was urban legend.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
It's not, Al.
Oh, must I?
You've got the Magic Panther touch.
Yeah, but I hate that friggin' movie. We're gonna get a lot of angry email now, but I thought The Crow was garbage.
Why don't we, for the sake of our own show here, make up a reason that he died that we could all agree on? Like
someone put Gary Coleman into a gun and fired it at.
A panther did that.
Panther shot Gary Coleman,
and then it turned into a hawk and flew away.
Yes,
some animal killed him, basically.
Stole the stopwatch.
When the blank was fired, the bullet shot out and hit Lee in the abdomen and lodged in his spine.
Huh.
So, yeah.
So, unluckiest dude ever.
Yeah, apparently. Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
No. That would be Gene Wilder, who died tragically.
Yeah. Rest in peace. Something that... what's that?
In a ballooning accident.
A tragic knife fight.
This myth that we're going, that Gene Wilder died in a freak ballooning accident.
A knife fight on a balloon. We need to be consistent here. Come on. Now, I remember Chris Cage actually likes to point out that Bruce Lee, his official cause of death is listed as misadventure.
Nice!
And
I've heard that.
Chris says that he really wants, you know, that to be his cause of death, like when he finally goes.
Mm-hmm.
He wants it to be misadventure.
That covers a wide spectrum of potential deaths.
Does it? I mean, what's the official legal definition? Like,
I don't know if there's legal definition. I think that if you
pull out,
like,
the coroner's dictionary, there must be, like, a...
Like, I would say that if you choke to death on an olive loaf sandwich and you're on your front lawn, that qualifies as misadventure. The alternative is terrible to tell people.
Yeah, but, I mean, misadventure implies that you went on an adventure and it went horribly wrong. I mean, eating a sandwich is not terribly adventurous.
It is if you're eating an olive loaf sandwich.
I suppose. What was that, Matt?
What if the sandwich is half panther, half hawk?
That's an adventure.
Yeah.
So that's not so much a sandwich as it is a manimal witch.
That's right.
I was tampering in your domain and I failed there. I was trying to portmanteau and it just went wrong. I mean, I was thinking, ooh, manwich works, so manimal witch must. No, it doesn't work.
No.
So yeah. I think that Chris Cage has to die the following way for it to be qualified as misadventure. Somebody has to fire Gary Coleman into a balloon that Gene Wilder was piloting.
Uh huh. And this is very difficult because many of these people are dead now. So
I know. So Chris is in a lot of. He's already got some. Deck stacked against him, and then Gene Wilder's panther falls on him.
his panther. So he owns a panther.
Absolutely.
Didn't you know that?
Nobody knows that about Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder is always riding a panther.
So like Skeletor.
Yeah, exactly. Skeletor's panther. Gene Wilder stole it from him.
Panthor. Yes, he was made of purple velvet. I remember that. The toy was in no way posable. It was frozen in a certain pose, and it was made of purple velvet.
The adventure of Gene Wilder and his velour panther.
Velour. Because I remember I was just a little too old for the whole He-Man thing, but my brother played with those, and I remember quoting something that he would have not have gotten at all, but I delighted myself, like, you know, touching Panthor. This is beautiful. What is that, velvet?
It's a purple velvet?
Yeah.
Oh, so Panthor is basically Prince.
Yes.
Well. That really puts a whole spin on the whole manimal thing now, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Because if Prince is a panther...
I would totally buy Prince being a panther.
Well, wait. But then LL Cool J at one point was walking with the panther. You remember that?
Yeah, LL Cool J was walking with Prince.
Yeah.
Prince is owned by Gene Wilder.
I suppose he's that type of guy, so that makes sense. But
it's just street vernacular, man.
It's so hard for me to keep up. Even like I'm like 20 years behind, and so if this happened like, you know, 18 years ago, then I'm still not quite getting it. So
yeah, walking with a panther probably means an entirely different thing now.
Well, quite probably. I don't know. Let's look it up on our Urban Dictionary. Let's make this the Google show.
Yes.
Metaphor for walking with a hawk.
So what you're trying to say scientifically, Matt, is that hawks and panthers are equal to one another?
Yes. Hawk equals panther.
Wow.
And vice versa.
That makes the commutative property of Manimal basically means.
That's why he could only turn into two things.
Huh.
Only turn into the two most awesome things.
Yeah, exactly.
Walking with the panther isn't defined yet, but these are close. I'm so bad I could suck my own dick. Supremacy Rangers and Tupac.
Are those things close?
That's what Urban Dictionary says.
Can a panther suck a hawk's dick?
Do hawks have dicks?
If they do, a panther would suck it.
But they've got those teeth. That would be terrible.
No, a panther is excellent at sucking a hawk's dick.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know all this?
I'm a font of information.
It's like a Ralph Bashke's Jungle Book.
Oh, God. Jokes are forming, and they're not coming together fast enough. They're trying to, but it's been so long since I've seen the Jungle Book, and I just, I don't even know now. But some of them are almost certainly racist. And, we don't have our clearance to be racist until we have Ushwin.
We'll have to call our legion of various listeners who can defend us.
Well, Fourth Man told us this directly. He's like, I know, when you guys have me on, I can tell there's just this sort of subtle, unspoken, like, oh, it's cool. We got our black friend here. It's fine. Well, that wasn't what I was thinking at all, but now it is.
Sarcastic Voyage is being charged with racism. We would just like to point out that we have a black friend who says it's okay. Oh, well.
Because that phrase never says, I'm not racist.
No, yeah, exactly.
I have a black friend.
Listen. We are racist. We're openly racist and homophobic and what else? What other misogynistic, anti-panther? We're
clearly,
yeah.
We are pro-hawk.
Yeah, oddly enough, even though one equals the other, we're in favor of one and against the other.
We clearly got an issue about gay panthers too.
Well, the pink panther.
Gay panther.
That guy's cool. I got no problem with him. I got no beef with the pink panther. He's all right.
I always thought he was a little asexual myself.
When he starts talking, that's what I didn't like.
Yeah.
Like when they did the 90s Pink Panther. And
90s Pink Panther was not very good.
No. And he spoke with the voice of Matt Frewer, who deserved better. Yeah, not so much. No, I made the leap there. You like Gay Panther. Okay, well, what would the Gay Panther Party be? Well, the Black Panthers was for black people. So obviously the Pink Panthers would be for the homos, right?
Sure. Nice. And then the Pink Panther fucked the Velour Panther.
Yes. Wow. I think I got tangled up in my own logic here. Yeah. So, Mike, how are you?
I'm good. Hey. How about those Pink Panthers?
Yeah.
Are we done with whatever that was?
I don't know.
Yeah, really kind of went far off the question, didn't we?
Was there a question? I don't even remember.
We started with a long question, and then we ended up with, gay sex in the animal kingdom and offending almost everyone alive.
Well, who's left, really?
Let's see.
I haven't ragged on you for being a Guido at all yet, so...
There you go. Come on, hit me.
Well, I was going to, you were in the middle of a story and I didn't want to interrupt you, but, just the fact that, like 7 minutes in, you dropped the name, what was it, Chuck Zito? Like, come on. Come on, Jersey boy. Jesus Christ.
Well, Italians know each other by a first name basis.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to turn into a hawk.
What am I, some kind of a manimal? Yeah, that's all I got.
That's the line, Godfather. Drop the gun, take the fist.
You know I'd go from hawk to panther.
Wow.
So let's do the Ginzo stuff. I'm down with that.
What's that?
You can throw whatever you want at me for the Ginzo stuff.
That's all I got. I mean, I know nothing. I know.
Oh, come on.
No, really. I grew up in rural Maryland. I know only what I saw on TV, and most of that was. Old stuff, like stuff from the 40s. Like, I know most of the Italian slurs I know come from Bugs Bunny, not from anything current. I mean, yeah, that's the premise now, but...
Hit me up with a WAP. You can hit me up with a...
I don't think we'll be doing that.
Listen to me, my Krupp Mick friend.
You had to learn some choice stuff from the Untouchables.
Well, yeah, but most of that...
Sean Connery went on a tear in that film.
Well... to an extent. I mean, you know, I have a lot of that memorized, but I have a lot of the home stuff memorized too. I actually did the A Man Stands Alone at a Plate. I did that as a monologue in theater class.
Nice.
So I don't really distinguish in that movie. Like there's a bit of a hard time on all sides there, but I don't discriminate. So let me ask you this though: do you bring a knife to a gunfight?
Well, I'm a WOP, so yeah.
Well, all right then. I have no idea. The thing I knew growing up, and I'm being kind of serious here, Jersey was just such one of those stale punchlines. Is like
it still is.
Yeah, and but I mean, it was stale in the 80s. Like I would hear a stand up comic say, you know, the build up, and Jersey, and like I already knew it.
Well, what exit are you from?
Yeah, I mean, by like age 12, I knew that wasn't funny already, and I was ready to move on, and nobody else was. I mean, yeah, I can hold you guys responsible for Flonk, but
yeah,
there's also you. There's also Fourth Man. There's also
listen. The state of New Jersey has apologized profusely for Flonk
several times.
Yeah,
really, because I've not heard. I think I am due a specific like personal apology there, honestly, and I've gotten nothing. So, I mean, a blanket apology just ain't gonna cut it. That's what I'm saying. I think,
dear Al. Yeah. How are you? We are fine. We would like to thoroughly apologize for Flonk. Yours, New Jersey.
You may actually be due reparations at this point for Flonk.
That would be fantastic. Although I think, honestly, first in line for that would be Brian Lynch.
No one has suffered as he has.
Yes. Poor bastard's got to live with him. So there is that. Flonk, we kid because we hate you. But no, really, the Jersey thing, I mean, I knew was stupid punchlines, and I hate that. I hate going the standard, like, oh, Jersey, you know. But I will tell you, me and the show's voice guy, Dave, took a trip to the Meadowlands. We went to, actually, it was a Star Trek convention. Uh-huh. Drove up there, got horribly lost, drove ridiculously in circles. It was a fucking nightmare. It was maybe, like, the worst road trip I've ever made. And the Jersey Turnpike basically is... It can go fuck itself, basically.
Yeah. I'll say this. We have, especially in northern New Jersey, the signage is hellacious. If you haven't lived here your entire life, you'll get lost at the drop of a hat. And the turnpike, just the visual stimuli of the turnpike is everything that everybody thinks about of New Jersey.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's smelly factory, smelly electrical plant. Yeah.
And you watch that opening bit of The Sopranos, and after he's out of the city, that's exactly what it looks like. I mean,
I mean, I am so sick of the hoary Jersey cliches too, but I also understand that we've earned them over time. I mean,
until I was like 20, whatever I was at the time, I just come on, stop making that stupid joke. But that was a hellish weekend. I mean, and that was bad.
And yeah, and things like the Jersey Shore do not help our image at all.
Oh,
I'm only very peripherally aware of that, but I can't imagine. It's doing you much good. Now.
What I've
it's
heard
not doing us much good, but it's also, as somebody who's been down to the Jersey Shore themselves, it's frighteningly accurate. It's exactly what it's like. It is. It makes your skin crawl.
Oh.
All I can imagine is like a bunch of chicks like Adriana and a bunch of back hair. That's what I assume that show is, but I have no idea.
Pretty close.
Oh, fair enough.
And a hot tub action.
Ooh, hot tub time machine action?
No, unfortunately, no. Although the hair hasn't really changed much in the last 20 years. The product might be different, and the music is, but the hair is exactly the same.
So, incidentally, this is the, I think, seventh show in a row that we've mentioned Hot Tub Time Machine. I think they owe us at this point.
I think we need to provide commentary for it now.
I don't know. We need something. I mean, I have no opinion of that movie one way or the other, but we've mentioned that title so many times now that I'm pretty sure we are owed some kind of...
Yeah. Sarcastic Voyage is brought to you by Hot Tub Time Machine.
And it can be the worst movie in the world, but that title.
Yeah, exactly. I maintain that you know, a terrible title will live on forever, regardless of the movie. I still make jokes about Cops and Robbersons, for instance.
Wow.
And nobody remembers anything about that movie, but...
Not even Chevy Chase.
Yeah, well, Chevy Chase and Jack Palance.
That's a lot of things Chevy Chase doesn't remember.
Well,
that Jack Palance's big cash grab after the Oscar win?
No, that was City Slickers.
I thought that was what he did right after he got the Oscar.
No, then that was City Slickers 2.
Oh, was it?
I don't know, actually.
Regardless, either one, it wasn't a good choice.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. But then, you know, I mean, he's one of those guys where, yeah, he's fun to watch or whatever, but an Oscar? Really? But that's just me. I don't know.
I sure wish my defining Jack Palance movie wasn't Mitchell.
Come on, you got Burton's Batman at least.
That's true.
That's my go-to when I think of Jack Palance. You
nope.
are my number one guy.
Nope.
Don Baker.
Straight to Mitchell.
Joe Don Baker still acts, and every time you see him, you just think Mitchell.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, he was in one of the Bond flicks.
Yeah.
Recent Bond flicks?
One of the Pierce Brosnan ones.
Okay. Internet, help me out here.
He was Felix something.
He was in the Dukes of Hazzard movie, but there's no surprise.
Yeah, that's a shock. He was in Mars Attacks, too.
Oh, that's right, he was. And bringing things full circle, he was in a movie called Panther.
Joe Don Baker could turn into a hawk?
Apparently so.
Let's see.
It was a movie about the Black Panthers, starring, directed by Mario Van Peebles. Starring nobody.
Hey, Joe Don Baker.
Well, all right.
That's not a nobody, man.
He must have played one of the Southern governors that turned the fire hoses on the poor guys trying to get into to the universities.
Yeah, here we go. He was in GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies as CIA agent Jack Wade.
Oh, for the love of Christ.
And he was a villain in The Living Daylights.
Oh, and he was in Leonard Part 6.
And
what about Ghost Dad? Was he in Ghost Dad?
I'm pretty sure at this point the estate of Bill Cosby disavows all knowledge of Ghost Dad.
You know, he did show up in Scorsese's Cape Fear.
Did he really?
Yep.
Given that, yeah. He was the private eye that lasted 5 seconds against De Niro.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. He was the one that set the trap with the string.
See, now I just remember the Simpsons episode where...
it's completely overshadowed.
If you invite him in your house, it's nice and legal. No, you can't invite him. No, that's what it is.
Completely overshadowed the movie.
Yeah. No, I was remembering Robert Mitchum, and then I was saying, well, maybe I'm thinking of the original. No, he was in that too. But, I'm thinking of a different guy, so never mind. I'm all confused. Were there any Panthers in Cape Fear?
There should have been.
There was one in the back. It didn't come up much.
It was that great finger-sucking scene that they had to take out. Oh, that's right. He was the bad guy in Fletch. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Or Joe Don Baker, not the Panther. Wow.
No Panthers in Fletch either, by the way.
No. I know that movie backwards and forwards. There are absolutely no Panthers.
It was like six hawks, though.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
That movie is lousy for hawks.
And George Wendt.
If a Panther played Fletch, he would have ordered at least two more steak sandwiches.
Oh, for God, Don Don. We're going to lose Matt, aren't we? Yeah, we have this problem, and we've mentioned this before, trying to convince Matt that there was a time when Chevy Chase was funny.
Oh, God, it's hysterical.
It's very difficult to do that, because it was a very narrow window. I mean, you got SNL, you got Caddyshack, you got Fletch, you got the first couple of Vacation movies, and that's it.
Yep.
And then he's done. Did either of you guys see, apparently they did this little short film / ad during the Super Bowl of Clark and Ellen Griswold?
I did see that.
God, really?
It was painful.
It was. Nobody's aged well.
No, not at all. And I was hoping Beverly Angela would still be, you know, a little something to look at, and not so much.
Was it you that told me they were doing a new Vacation movie with the kid?
Not me.
I think they're doing a reboot. They want to. Oh. They have everything now, so it's like...
Rebooting things. Okay. Well, then I remember Star Trek was good. God damn it. Okay, fine. Keep rebooting things.
Well, you gotta be careful. For every 5 reboots, you get one good one.
Use caution when rebooting.
Yes, please. They won't do that.
No, they won't.
Well, in the pre-show, we were talking about the Punisher, and I think you guys had decided that 3 was too many and that they wouldn't be rebooting that again. Whereas I disagree. I think Hollywood, and I don't mean to kind of fall back on the hack thing, but really... I think they're going to push new ground. I think the fact that they were exploring the idea of a Battlestar Galactica reboot within a month of that show wrapping up.
Yep,
that's true.
Tells me that we are nowhere near the most ridiculous you can get with that.
Oh, no. And I mean, Punisher is an easy sell. Guy with gun shoots mobsters. Yep. That's all movies. So.
And then all you got to say is it's based on a comic book. And right now that's like a license to print money. So
yeah, exactly.
You know.
And Battlestar Galactica is not the only thing that we're seeing that with. I mean, there's been reports that the movie studio wants to do another one of the Jason Bourne movies, but since Damon's out, they're looking to reboot.
Why don't you just do a sequel with a different guy?
Yeah.
I mean, nope. Reboot.
All right.
Remember you used to be able to do that? You know, there's like 12 Bonds.
Okay, here's the thing. This came up last week, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. I was not aware that Jerry Bruckheimer is making a live-action representation of The Sorcerer's Apprentice starring Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go see that trailer immediately. It's cringeworthy.
Yeah, but my God.
Here's the thing. Okay, in comedy, there is a point at which the most ridiculous, grossest exaggerations become reality. It's inevitable. There's like an event horizon where, you know, the most ridiculous thing you can imagine will happen. But this happened really quickly. Like, we're like 20 years ahead of the curve on this. I'm trying to break this down. I'm like, because I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's like, no, come on. You know, you make stupid jokes, and it happens. Like, did you ever think they would do a live-action Scooby-Doo movie? I mean, you know, it's inevitable. But really, this is way ahead of its time. This is far too soon for something this ridiculous to happen.
I don't know. I think the runaway success of Pirates of the Caribbean just meant that they're going to try every small...
Nicolas Cage as Mickey Mouse?
No. Nicolas Cage plays the wizard.
He's not the apprentice. Yeah, he's the sorcerer.
The kid plays the Mickey Mouse.
Oh, see, I haven't seen the trailer because I have a hard enough time just hearing that it exists. I can't even imagine.
Also, I'm having a tough time picturing the word exaggerate and Nicolas Cage in the same sentence.
I suppose that's true. No, but really, if you were making a joke, if you're saying, okay, what, you know, hearing about all the cartoon live action adaptations, what's next? The Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nick Cage? You know, like, that just seems like the most ridiculous thing you could think of.
I don't know.
Like, what's next? Michael Bay does Steamboat Willie? I mean, that's probably going to happen now, too. So, you know.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Oh, God. Is Toe Thumbs playing Mini?
Probably.
God damn it.
We got, let's see here. We got the Teacup Ride.
Okay, right. The Hall of Presidents.
Yep.
They already tried the Haunted Mansion.
Technically, Hall of Presidents is going to be National Treasure 3.
Well, again, Nicolas Cage is your go-to for every shitty movie from a ride.
You know, I've been thinking about like doing some kind of a game show on here, like some kind of a fun little, you know, bring a few people on, and I think this would be a fun like name like three movies and pick which one is fake, like three ridiculous movies. Because right now you guys are making jokes or maybe being serious, and I can't tell anymore. I think it would be great to bring on a contestant and say, okay, The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Marmaduke, which one of these is real? And it's a trick question. They both are.
And you can add the Smurfs.
Are they doing the Smurfs too?
Yes.
They're doing a Smurfs movie.
Live action?
CGI.
Okay,
I believe.
See, now that would be okay.
But I would like to see like a live action Smurf and then see who they hire as the Smurfs. Like, and then get like really crazy actors like James Gandolfini would be great.
That's Papa Smurf.
I don't know. Yeah. Grumpy.
Christopher Walken would be Papa Smurf.
I'm just, you know, Gandolfini, like, I'm sure you know this, Mike, sounds nothing like Tony Soprano. Hearing him speak, it's like, well, for the role of Tony, I researched, I went down to the shore, as they say. You see him on the show, and you're like, hey, you're a fag, okay? You know, it's like, what the fuck just happened? It's amazing. So I'm trying to wrap my head. If he's not playing Tony Soprano, could he do, like, you know, could he play that role? Could he pull that off, you think?
I'm not sure. He did great in Where the Wild Things Are, so maybe he could do a Smurf.
That's basically the same thing.
That brings me to another point, which is actually, and I'm grabbing other people's material left and right here, but they're not here, so, you know. Ed Casey, who we've had on a few times, mentioned this some time ago. Can you guys remember why Gargamel wanted to catch the Smurfs?
Oh, shit, yeah.
Because there's the answer you think there is, and that's wrong.
I always thought for a stew.
Well, that's what I thought, but apparently earlier on he had a magic spell that could turn them into gold. And as soon as somebody said that, it clicked. I'm like, yes, I do remember that.
I don't remember that.
And that throws the whole show because, you know, once the bad guy has no motive, you know, or has multiple motive, you know, what's it all about? It's, you know, your whole system of belief is torn apart there. I mean, you're going into weird Smurf Lutheran territory here where you know.
Well, I mean, look, he was never the greatest villain to begin with.
Come on.
Got a homeless wizard.
He's not homeless. He had a little shack that he did spells in.
Okay, well, it wasn't a good home.
No, it wasn't a good home, but they lived in medieval times. I mean, what do you want him to have, like a castle?
Clearly didn't have a maid service.
Yeah, why not?
He had no Willikins. I mean, you know, come on.
Willikins! Bring
That's
me
That's the first thing you do for the movie. That's the first thing we get in the movie.
Give him a butler?
Give him a Willikins.
Well, then what do you do with Azrael? That's his comedy foil there. That's his, you know, yelling.
I don't know. You get Bill Murray to do his voice, though.
Nice.
Bill Murray's not doing the voice of Marmaduke, I hope, right?
No, that's not happening, is it? Worse. Owen Wilson is doing the voice of Marmaduke.
Oh, okay.
Now, see, I still can't tell if you're kidding.
Or is it Luke Wilson? It's a Wilson.
Well, that doesn't break your heart like finding out Bill Murray does it.
Is it Wilson the beach ball?
No, it's that Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace.
Well, that would be acceptable. I'm trying to find where they're doing this, and I don't. Oh, here we go. Marmaduke film. They're going to do a CG dog. Why would you do a CG dog? Why don't you just make?
If you didn't think Marmaduke could get more terrifying,
listen. All you need to do is the movie Beethoven with a different kind of dog.
Hmm?
That's it. You're done.
Yep.
Cash your check, go home early. It's not that difficult. Oh, look, Judy Greer's in that.
Oh, Judy.
Because she's got to eat.
She does have to eat.
We've now said goodbye to these.
All right, so they've done Marmaduke. They've done Garfield. I guess Family Circus next.
Yeah.
Well, I was surprised.
Nicolas Cage is the I didn't do it ghost.
No, that's not me.
I was talking to someone on Twitter today about, what was it? About, actors that sandwich actors.
Yeah, we were talking.
Someone was saying Alan Tudyk from Firefly was going to be the next Bruce Campbell, but they said he was going to be the next BC. I read that as he was going to be BC in the movie adaptation of the comic strip BC. Yeah,
and then you got totally excited
about religious cavemen.
That's all I remember about that strip.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Tudyk is Andy Capp.
Well, see, I'd watch that.
Especially if you get another Firefly alum to be the wife that he beats. Zoe or that other chick.
Watch him beat the shit out of Jewel Strait.
Yeah, exactly. Or, fuck, I can't remember her name. The one that's in all the canceled shows.
I don't know. The other one.
Gina Torres?
Summer Glau.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Summer Glau.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they could do bad Irish accents and beat each other up for an hour. That'd be fantastic. Looking at this Marmaduke movie, Jesus Christ.
It's soul crushing.
Owen Wilson is Marmaduke.
You know, the phrase bottom of the barrel gets tossed around a lot these days.
William H. Macy's in it. Ron Perlman's in it. Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland plays the villainous dog.
No, does he?
Yep.
Again, I don't know if you're kidding or not. You could be.
I watched the trailer for this.
Why did you watch the trailer for that?
Because I need to see how bad it was so I can make fun of it now.
I don't believe you.
That's a weak excuse.
Yeah, it really is.
No, fine. I really want to see Marmaduke.
All right. I was really surprised after Garfield that they didn't rush out a direct-to-video Heathcliff movie, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of surprised about that, too, now that you mentioned
Roger Corman's Heathcliff.
With Brian Doyle Murray as Heathcliff. That's your standard substitution, right?
What was the other Murray brother? Actually, because I don't even know if you get Brian Doyle for that. What was the Murray brother that was in that bad Moving Violations movie in the 80s? You remember that? HBO played that a lot.
I vaguely recall that.
Bad Police Academy ripoff with Bill Murray's younger brother.
A Police Academy ripoff? That's already pretty cool.
Wrap your head around that for a few seconds.
No. I'm still dealing with The Sorcerer's Apprentice, dude. Wikipedia is failing me. I have no idea. We're going to say Jim.
I think it's Doyle. Doyle Murphy.
Doyle Murphy.
Murray. Murphy. Different family entirely.
Right, of course.
Now, for a while, this is actually something I noticed working at a video store. Many celebrities have a lesser successful younger brother named Jim. I was made aware of this. Well, I mean, of course, there's Jim Belushi. And he might actually be the older brother. I don't know. But it doesn't matter.
No, he's the younger. I was looking at him earlier.
Of course you were. Why? Never mind.
Same thing with the Marmaduke thing, man. Just let it go.
Yeah. The first time I noticed this, and then I noticed it successfully with other people, is there is a Jim Hanks, who was in...
He's out of town.
No, there is. And he was in a movie similar to Bachelor Party, but different enough to be intellectually distinct.
It was like, I think there's a... I think there might be a Jim Swayze, too. Now that I'm thinking of it.
Here we go. James M. Jim Hanks is an American voiceover artist and character actor. He's the brother of Tom Hanks and often substitutes for Tom in the role of Woody in various Toy Story video games and spinoffs.
Wow.
He's also starred, this is the movie I was thinking of that was the ripoff of Bachelor Party, in the softcore, soft porn comedy Buford's Beach Bunnies.
That's a winning title right there.
Well, but you know, it's one of those lesser successful younger brother tries to cash in on the success of his
more successful. By the way, it is Don Swayze. After
Don on the phone. Don Swayze, really? Is Patrick Swayze dead?
You know, Don Swayze looks like Patrick Swayze dead.
If you've seen Patrick Swayze dead, yes, he is. Okay, I thought I remembered that he died, but then I thought that about Gene Wilder as well. And yeah, Don Swayze, huh? He's still alive. Don Swayze. Of course he is.
Of course, there's a Don Swayze.
You know, I bet over in Liverpool, there's a fucking Jim Lennon like recording albums and just living up, and he'll live to be 200. God damn it.
Bob McCartney, and they're going to hook up.
Yeah. That's all I got there. No, there's there are other Jims I know, and I'm drawing a blank now. Jim Hanks was the big find. And I did my best to try to get people to rent Beach Blanket, whatever the fuck I just said. Buford's Beach Blanket, yeah.
That's going to be the saddest of the Hollywood careers, the entirely untalented younger brother.
Oh, yeah.
Actory. Oh, I don't know, man.
It's
there's,
up there.
There's, I mean, because that's a quick cash grab. There's like a year of indignity, and then you got, you know, $1 million. Mm-hmm. There's scraping along as a bad character actor and just never getting your break, I think, is much worse.
Yeah, that's pretty rough, but...
You know, being a regular in Roger Corman movies for 30 years and never getting the call to be in anything.
Yeah.
That's much worse than just, you know, selling out for a year and then going back to carpentry or whatever. Oh, it was
these guys never go back to carpentry. They always just hang around.
Well, yeah, like Billy Carter, I suppose.
Eventually, they get a sitcom.
Or fuck, what was the guy? Was it Neil Connery?
Yes, it's Neil Connery.
Was that it?
That was it.
Yeah, he was in an MST movie that was.
He was a 007.
Yeah, Secret Agent 007. No, Operation 007.
That was it. Yeah.
Yep.
Matt mentioning the series, that means to me that like Jim Belushi has to be considered to be like,
oh yeah, the king of the lesser the successful king. Younger brothers.
Yeah,
although he's like, doing
he's what they all aspire to.
No, he's worse because he's exploiting his dead brother. Mm-hmm. Like it's bad enough when you're exploiting, you know, someone who's alive and famous, but you know, John died before he could do anything bad. Like he is, you know, he went out more or less on top. I mean, he might have done a bad thing or two, but for the most part, we have nothing but fond memories of him. We didn't see him decline and you know, do shit like we did with Aykroyd and Chevy Chase and everybody else. So yeah. Everyone has this image in their mind of John Belushi, and then Jim's just kind of cashing in on that. That's terrible.
Yeah, every time I see him in that Blues Brothers.
2000?
And Blues Brothers 2000, anytime he goes to the House of Blues and does the character with Dan Aykroyd, it just, your soul dies a little bit.
Come on, you know better than that, Dan. Just go do Ghostbusters 3 or something.
Don't make your stupid novelty vodka and shut up.
What? Is he making vodka now?
Yes, he has Crystal Head vodka.
Oh.
So if you've ever wanted to drink out of a crappy prop from the bad Indiana Jones movie, you can pay $50 for that privilege.
He drains it through his webbed toes.
yes. Whenever the subject of Dan Aykroyd comes up, Matt must point out his webbed toes.
I'm fascinated by it.
Really? You know, like, yep. A bunch of people have those.
Yeah, but none of them are Dan Aykroyd.
All right. But I mean, a significant percentage, like 5% or something of people have webbed toes. It's not...
That's fine.
That's some irrefutable panther logic right there.
But only 1% of them are Dan Aykroyd, though.
Wow. You just blew my mind there with your horrible, horrible math. Is that what they teach in that sissy school of yours?
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm looking at Blues Brothers 2000. John Goodman should have known better, too. What's wrong with him? Actually, you know, John Goodman may be the king of the sandwich actors, now that I think of it.
He hasn't worked steadily in a long time, though, has he?
He was in Speed Racer.
See, you think that, but then you look at his
his filmography, and you realize he's still working. He's just doing crap I'm not watching, because he will do anything. He's that is the definition of the sandwich actor. The guy they and often they're great actors. I mean, you got great, you know, solid actors like Samuel L. Jackson or like Michael Caine or like who's the one that I always Gene Hackman is like the quintessential sandwich actor.
Oh yeah.
Where it's just like they don't really they can't really distinguish or they don't care if it's a good role or a bad role. It's a role.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the sandwich, I'll do it. Sometimes it's an Oscar-winning performance. Sometimes it's the worst direct-to-video shit you can think of. But, you know, at the end, they got their sandwich. So,
well, John Goodman's actually going to show up pretty soon in something that I am looking forward to. So it'll be nice to see him again.
Well, which is that?
There's a new HBO show coming out from the guys that did The Wire called Tremé. And it's basically the same social-political spectrum that they did in The Wire only applied to post-Katrina New Orleans.
Well, wow. You had me at the guys who did The Wire. I'm sold.
So instead of cops and robbers, we're going to start with the musicians of New Orleans, and then I would imagine if this show lasts more than a season, we'll build from there.
Fantastic.
Wow, Wikipedia, you could not have provided a worse picture of Dan or of John Goodman.
Well, he's getting up there. He's what, in his late 50s? Yeah.
57, yeah. Good God.
He's coming up in a movie about Paul Bunyan. That is actually good casting. It could be a sucky movie.
Yeah, I could see that.
But that's actually good casting. But then again, I thought that him as Fred Flintstone was good casting, and that movie was just total crap.
That was good casting. That was just a terrible movie.
And then looking at this Paul Bunyan movie, yes, this is the episode where we browse around Wikipedia. He's starring alongside such illustrious co-stars as Jeff Foxworthy and Kelsey Grammer, so... Gotta be great.
Yes, and Jeff Foxworthy is Babe the Blue Ox, according to IMDb, so that went right in the toilet.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? Because, I mean, my experience growing up, and this just could be because I went to this area, but I thought Paul Bunyan was from, like, you know, Minnesota-type area. Like, Jeff Foxworthy, that doesn't really work there. You need somebody with that, you know, like a Midwestern accent. You can't...
Well, I'm sure it's going to be for kids, so I don't think it's going to be that accurate as to the underpinnings of the actual region.
I suppose. I don't know. I've been spoiled because we're starting to get decent nerd movies now, so you know, I every now and then I still catch myself expecting everything to be good, and most things aren't. So, you know, I always forget that.
Dream that dream, dude.
Yep.
Keep fucking that chicken?
Yeah, keep fucking that chicken.
All right, then.
That's my local news anchor, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah, Ernie Anastas.
Is he still on there?
He's still on there.
Wow. Well, good for you guys, like, apparently.
For people who in the know, they say that he is, in real life, Anchorman Stupid.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Always good.
So it's only a matter of time that something like this happened. It's a miracle it doesn't happen more.
Now, what was the story behind that? Did somebody fuck with his prompter? Did he just misspeak? Did he do it on purpose?
I think it was a misspeak. I mean,
I can't imagine what he meant to say.
He started off comparing the weatherman to Frank Perdue. He was doing the, you know, the Frank Perdue line of "It takes a tender man."
Sure.
It takes a strong man to make a tender chicken.
It takes a tough
man. Then he was like, "It takes a strong man to make a tender forecast." And then
I can see that.
It was a stupid analogy in the first place. Doesn't work at all. But then he kind of got locked into it, and then it ended with somebody sticking something in a chicken.
Well, you know, all good stories end that way. And unfortunately, here's my best segue yet. This is how we're going to have to end, with somebody sticking something in a chicken.
I think that's your title.
No, I'm pretty sure we're going to go with something Panther related, but
Panther sticks something in a chicken.
Well, there's our cover art. I wonder if Loic has got a little extra time for us too. But Mike, we do appreciate your time, and great talking to you.
Hey guys, it was a total pleasure. I love the show.
Have to do it again. Thanks, soon. Man. Wait, you love the show?
I love the show.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. A lot of fun.
You know, there are other podcasts.
Yeah, they do exist.
But they don't have me on.
This is a good point. All right, Mike, thanks a lot. And
See you, man.
We're going to stop talking now.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website, again, is sarcasticvoyage.com.
Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, at RobotMatt and at Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010.
That was pretty cool.